Everyone, welcome back to another episode of the 443 Security Simplified. I'm your host, Mark LaLiberty, and joining me today is...
Wilson. Where are you, Wilson? Oh, there you are. It's nice to talk to someone again, Wilson. How are you? You remember me. I'm Corey Knockreiner. Been home alone for quite a long time.
Corey's quite clearly going insane. Hopefully we'll use some of his sanity to go over some of the news stories we have in this podcast. Let's go ahead and jump on in before Corey goes nuts. So, Corey, first question to you, actually. When is the last time that you played with your Nintendo Switch?
Yesterday, my daughter did. I have to admit, it's sitting charging next to me, but I don't think I've touched it for a long time other than handing it to my daughter. I love Zelda.
Not even for Animal Crossing?
I'm not an Animal Crossing person, but that's exactly why my daughter wanted it. She couldn't find our old school DS Crossing, so she came to get the Switch thinking I might have already purchased the new one, which I have not. So she is soundly disappointed, but ended up playing some Mario anyways.
You are, I think, the single human being on this planet that hasn't gotten the new Animal Crossing yet.
It's for some reason, that was an addictive game that I've skipped, even in the DS days. I did have it on the DS for the girls, but never really played it much. And honestly,
genuinely one of my
I don't want to
games.
Have to go dig for bones just to do something, so maybe I'm smart.
It's so much more than that. You can catch butterflies and grow plants and get fruit and catch
fish. And
have
random friends you're stuck with or random vegetables that your island happens to be good at that you don't even want anymore.
I happen to enjoy
the game. I'm sure it's great. I'm being purposely contrary, and everyone I know loves the game. It just is one of those things, just like Mad Men. I haven't watched Mad Men yet, even though I know I'd love it.
Wait, yeah, really?
Totally, really.
What the
and
heck?
It's totally up my alley.
Come on, man.
We all have our pop culture.
Well, you
got
to get on that. And maybe get Animal Crossing for your daughter. But not until you go and reset your Nintendo account password.
Yeah, why?
Because actually last week, Nintendo announced that 160,000 Nintendo accounts had been compromised by way of a legacy Nintendo Network ID system that they implemented back during the 3DS and Wii U days as a way to log into your Nintendo account. Nintendo says that the login IDs and passwords were obtained illegally by some other means other than their service, which sounds a lot like past the few things we've talked about on this podcast, but likely fueled by credential stuffing.
Just for the audience to remind them, that means if you know, bad guys get these big lists of stolen passwords that we talk about a lot, and then credential stuffing is a brute force attack where they just try these, you know, these passwords exist on some service, and they're hoping that they exist on these Nintendo accounts, and they brute force it, and every time they get a response, they now have an account with a password.
And it's not usually some, like, wild guess. Like, I'm willing to bet that they probably, like, stole a list from some other gaming service. Like, I know Epic's been breached before, Fortnite, things like that. And that there tends to be that if you sign up for one gaming service, you probably use some other gaming service, which means that they will try those credentials in your account.
And to your point, I call it a brute force, but it's not like a brute force of randomness. It's a brute force of a stolen list of passwords.
But in this case, the cyber criminals were able to use these compromised accounts to buy digital items. And their notice, they specifically said Fortnite V-Bucks were a big purchase, I guess. Honestly, I've never played Fortnite as we're talking about poo-pooing games, but I guess you could probably get these bucks for things in the game and then maybe transfer them around to steal money effectively.
Yeah, I haven't used Fortnite either, but I think we all know as gamers, certain games sometimes have real world, certain game items sometimes can be sold on open market and have real world value. So I would guess that they have found a way to monetize V-Bucks, right?
Yep, most likely. The good news is Nintendo did say they're going to refund all the fraudulent purchases from accounts that were compromised during this, which is nice. It's expected, but it's also nice. And they have advocated for all users to enable multi-factor authentication on their Nintendo account, as well as they've removed now that Nintendo Network ID integration. This is actually, I did not have multi-factor enabled on my Nintendo account because I didn't realize that it was an option until now. So this is actually kind of good news for me, I suppose.
I wonder if they support SAML. Maybe we could use Authpoint and use that instead. But that depends on if they support SAML. So don't go out yet and do it. I don't know if it's possible, but you can at least use Nintendo's text message based one, I'm sure.
I think they integrate with like the Google Authenticator type one-time password as well.
Well, that's great. So you can at least have it in your Authpoint client. Yep.
So long story short, if you were a victim of this breach or this attack, Nintendo will be emailing you, and they have already reset your password as well, so keep an eye out for that. In the grand scheme of things, 160,000 people is probably a pretty small chunk of Nintendo users overall, which also points to the further evidence that it wasn't likely a Nintendo breach. It was people using stolen credentials to get into them. Same advice we always give for that. Don't reuse your password between your accounts, especially gaming accounts, because they tend to be pretty high targets for cyber criminals, unfortunately.
By the way, one other pro tip, as you're having your kids, you know, kids may not always think ahead and be as responsible as adults, but as you're having your kids turn on multi-factor for their Nintendo account, one of the key parts of that process is they tend to give you a number, usually 10, of backup codes. Keep those codes somewhere, because chances are one day your kid or someone's going to lose, whether it's the token or whatever. And those codes are your only way back into account once you turn it
exactly.
on.
Exactly. And also, so another tip that I would tend to give is you don't have to link your credit card to these accounts usually. Like, I know it's a bit of a pain to enter it in every time you want to make a purchase, but in all honesty, like, with Nintendo, I don't really buy a whole lot of digital stuff that often, so it's not that big of an inconvenience for me in the few times where I do to enter my credit card and then remove the risk of having that.
I'm totally with you. I mean, I do have a little bit of risk, because what I do, because I don't link my credit card, is I sometimes buy packs of $50 or whatever so that I have like a balance. But it's a limited balance. It's not, my credit card is not there and it can't be charged. So I think that's a great tip. If you do have a limited balance, of course, that balance can be drained, but it's much better than having a connection to your credit card, for sure.
And having someone cash out hundreds of dollars in Fortnite V-Bucks after they get into your account. Anyways, so the next story that I wanted to talk about is a pretty interesting one, where it doesn't seem to be like a clear, it's a lot of he said, she said.
Interesting.
And a lot of back and forth on this one.
Must affect a lot of Android people, because I know you guys have a ton of security vulnerabilities, but you know me and my iPhone, I'm lucky, I'm bulletproof.
Oh yeah, completely bulletproof, so long as you get the patch that is currently not out yet for iOS.
What?
Where last week security firm ZecOps publicly disclosed two vulnerabilities in iOS's mail client after Apple released a beta update containing fixes for both flaws. So just in beta, not widely to the public yet. The flaws were, the first one was an out-of-bounds write flaw, and the second was a heap overflow, which is a little bit more of a serious one, because that's usually step one to gaining code execution on a vulnerable system.
I will say, and this is where we'll probably discuss it a little more, for the super nerds out there, code execution is getting harder and harder because of various memory protection mechanisms like address, what is it, random address?
ASLR.
Yeah, ASLR stands for address space layout randomization, and their DEP, you know, data execution protection, is a Microsoft concept, but same type of thing. It's simply when you execute code execution, you're literally figuring out, you have to figure out where a stack pointer is in order to put stuff in memory in the perfectly exact right place that it eventually be executed. And by randomizing memory a lot, it makes it a lot harder. Even if a person gets to the point where they can kind of arbitrarily put stuff in memory, for them to figure out where to put something so that it actually gets executed is a lot harder. So do know that heap overflows, as you said, Mark, are super dangerous and can lead to remote code execution. But things like ASLR make it a little harder to do, to actually exploit those type of flaws.
In the case of this flaw, the firm was advertising it as a zero-click flaw, meaning that in some versions of iOS,
the,
I think it was specifically the latest iOS 13,
version. The latest version is the kind of the worst.
The a malicious email can trigger the flaw without the user having to open the app or click anything. In iOS 12, they do have to click the email, or the attacker has to have control of the mail server.
But even for the click, it's kind of like a click preview. It's, you don't really have to interact with the email so much. You just have to put it up in a way that the OS previews it on your screen.
We saw like similar flaws a few years back in Android, where it was, I think it's like the video handler for their messaging app, where it would, when it receives a text message, if it had a maliciously formed video file attached to it, it would trigger basically code execution.
I believe there was a similar one for iOS too. There was a Messenger, their version of the tech, or not Messenger, whatever they called the Apple text app. It had a similar thing where just previewing a text message could result in code execution of some sort.
In their disclosure, ZecOps claims that they have evidence that the exploits were used intentionally in the wild, targeting a few individuals. They noted there was individuals from a Fortune 500 organization in America, an executive from a carrier in Japan, a VIP in Germany, some MSSPs in Saudi Arabia and Israel, and a journalist in Europe were what they listed as potential victims of someone trying to exploit this vulnerability.
As you can kind of probably guess by the type of individuals, they also allude that it was probably a nation-state actor. I think we'll probably get into how much evidence they've shared about this, but apparently some of the evidence has to do with known nation-state threat actors.
Interestingly, though, Apple put out a statement basically refuting a lot of ZecOps claims. So they said, here's one quote, "We have thoroughly investigated the researchers' report and, based off the information provided, have concluded these issues do not pose an immediate risk to our users. The flaws alone are insufficient to bypass iPhone and iPad security protections, and we found no evidence that they were used against our customers." So basically going completely counter to what ZecOps
I would say yes and no. I mean, to be clear, you said their exact response, but they do not deny the vulnerabilities. They actually say, you talked about two issues. They say there are three issues in the Mail app that are very true from these researchers. So they're not denying the three vulnerabilities. But as you just put, what they're saying is they actually don't feel like there's evidence of wild attacks, the six people you talked about. And even though the vulnerabilities exist to our conversation before, it's a question of whether you can really hijack the phone security with them because of maybe memory protection.
Yeah, even ZecOps said in the FAQs of their disclosure that these are basically stage one, and an attacker would still need to have some way to leak a memory address in order to bypass ASLR. And they didn't focus on that in their own research, which is interesting because, so they, again, you kind of mentioned they didn't really provide much evidence as to how they know these individuals and organizations were being targeted by this. But you would think that, like, if they had enough evidence to say people are being targeted by this, they might see additional details about the exploit chain and how they were actually abusing this vulnerability to maybe gain code execution. I would like to see a little bit more come out of this.
I would assume. I think some of the evidence, which we haven't talked about, is they saw a common thing malware researchers and security researchers do is pull strings from any malicious code. And strings are, you know, code is usually just that, code, so it's often not human-readable stuff, especially if it's machine code. But strings are really pulling some of the human-readable crap out of a chunk of code. And often, some of the ways we kind of fingerprint the tools, tactics, or procedures, or fingerprint in any way malicious groups, is sometimes there's common strings found in the code they use. And I forget exactly what it is, you probably know, Mark, but there was some number strings that were seen in nation-state actors. And you'd presume if they have actual exploits, they would be able to kind of follow what helped the exploit get past some of these protections.
Yeah, they said they confirmed that some data in potentially malicious emails contain pointers containing the numbers 4141 4141, as well
Wait
as
a
other
second, by the way,
memory
isn't
parts
that,
of the
that
data sent.
414141 is A's. By the way, for the nerds out there, one of the ways that when you have a buffer overflow or a stack or heap overflow, when you're trying to find things in memory, you need to give your debugger something to look for. So a very common thing is after you trigger a exploit, as you're enumerating it, you throw a bunch of A's in something, and then you search memory looking for where that bit of code is in memory. So that makes me suspicious because you don't see A's. That type of thing is something you do as you're researching a vulnerability. It's not part of the exploit. So I'm not sure what that, I guess I need to look into more why that string ties to a certain nation state threat actor.
So one of the things in their post was also they confirmed that it was not red team operations. So they basically it confirmed it wasn't penetration testing. So they think it was a malicious attack against these organizations. Again, not much evidence, so I can't really confirm or deny either way. Still something interesting.
I think our audience knows that we don't like vendors who badly go against researchers, like especially if the researcher's trying to do good. But I actually, you know, maybe you'll say this is my fanboyism, even though I deny it. I do think Apple actually does a good job with security lately. You know, they're not bulletproof, so some of their marketing around it might be bad, but the design they've put into their application and their team, you know, Windows Snyder, one of the women we followed in security before, used to run one of their security teams. She's moved on now. But they tend to really take this crap seriously and are as relatively transparent as a vendor would be. So I kind of find this he said, she said weird in that I, you know, a vendor sometimes do downplay things in a bad way, but I just can't imagine them downplaying this if it was any evidence to show otherwise. And I'm, even though if you read ZecOp with the Z's, you know, disclosure, their technical detail is perfect. It's on point. You know, there's no way you can argue with these issues. But I don't really see any supporting data for how they're really figuring out those six people were really affected by a live attack. I mean, it may be there. Maybe we'll learn it in the future. Maybe they're holding this back for when it's truly and completely fixed. But I find almost the drama between them and Apple more interesting than the vulnerabilities, even though the vulnerabilities are pretty serious, by the way.
And I mean, they did technically disclose this before the patch is available. Like, the patch right now is just in beta, so it's not available publicly. They did, so in their FAQs for the disclosure, they did include an answer for why they are disclosing it before a full patch is available. They basically said three bullet points. First, the bugs alone cannot harm iOS users, so they would need additional bugs or vulnerabilities in order to build a full exploit chain and gain control of a targeted device. Both bugs were already disclosed by way of the beta update, so any attacker that is looking at updates to beta, looking at code changes, would have noticed that it's going to be patched, which means that their window of opportunity is starting to go away, so they might actually exploit it more. And also because that they saw evidence that at least six organizations were impacted by the vulnerability. So, I mean, in my opinion, I guess those are good enough reasons to disclose it early. We see that pretty often where even Google, with their Project Zero, they normally have a 90-day disclosure period unless they are seeing it exploited directly in the wild, in which case they disclose immediately so people can protect themselves, basically.
And yet it's weird when there's no proof of this in the wild, right? I'm not, like, I agree with that concept, but there seems to be an argument whether this is in the wild or not. And like, if I were to be your devil's advocate against the release of this, the beta is not always, I'm not sure. So Apple's beta, one way you can get it is become part of their developer program. That costs money. You have to pay $99. Now that gets you really early betas. I believe that they also do free public betas too, but I'm unclear whether or not the 3.4, whatever the beta fix for this is. I don't know if that's in the public beta or the paid developer beta.
Yeah.
Do you?
I do not know off the top of my head, actually.
Yeah. So
it is 13.45 has the patch. Yeah.
And to be honest, the other argument is if there can be mitigating steps to do this, to fix this. But I'm kind of like, I'm unimpressed by their mitigating steps because it's essentially don't use the mail app, go use Gmail instead.
Yep.
You know, that's not a mitigating step. You know, you can't just avoid the 99% male app that every iOS user uses. And there's really nothing you can, especially if you have iOS 13, there's nothing you can do about this. You know, you receive the email, and if it can get past ASLR, which is in question, you would be dead. Not literally.
You would be dead, yes. Your phone will literally murder you.
Well, we do talk about how cyber attacks cause death, right? So.
Exactly. Either way, it is like, it's still a very serious flaw.
Absolutely.
Like a heap overflow is a serious vulnerability, and it's good that Apple's fixing it. Even in their like kind of refutation response back to them, Apple still said they basically praised them and said they like working with researchers like that.
Yep.
But
that's why I think Apple's doing the right thing.
I like having more details.
Yeah. I just question it. I'd like to know whether Apple's going to come out with the public version of this fix in the next week or the next 2 months. If it's the next week, I would argue that ZecOps should have waited a week.
I think that's fair. But I guess if you are an Apple fanboy like Corey here, who's currently wearing his Apple earpods and probably wearing an Apple Watch, I think your shirt even says Apple on it.
Liar in that I'm actually wearing the AirPods Pro, but my shirt has nothing to do with Apple. And my watch has actually been since I've been working at home.
As he records this podcast.
Oh, don't talk about my MacBook. Well, what are you working on right now, Mark?
Yeah, okay, that's fair. Yes, a MacBook. But anyways, if you've got an iPhone or an iPad, maybe consider using a different mail app until the patch comes out. I mean, it seems like...
Because that's so easy to do.
Other vulnerabilities would be... Right. Unless you're a really important person, you're probably fine, because it seems like they would have to burn
some
other
0 days. I got
an idea.
Why don't you use Outlook on your iOS? I'm sure that works well. Yeah.
But yes, you're probably safe. Just wait for the patch.
Yeah. Wait for the patch. Unless you work for the government or some Fortune 500 that someone might be trying to steal intellectual property from. Or maybe you're the Dalai Lama. I have a feeling they might target the Dalai Lama with this too. He has an iPhone.
Or maybe you're the WHO. Ooh, foreshadowing.
Ooh, good job. but we got a few more.
So next up in the news. Yes. FireEye just published a report last week stating that Vietnamese threat actors APT-32 have been targeting the Wuhan government and Chinese Ministry of Emergency Management since January to collect intelligence on the COVID-19 crisis. In their little report they published, they said that started in January with phishing emails that contain tracking links set to China's Ministry of Emergency Management. Basically, there are links to images or something that would get loaded when you open the email, and the link itself contained the attack or the victim's email address, so that when the mail client made a call out to load that content, the attacker would be able to effectively associate an IP address and maybe some additional metadata with that victim's email address. They also were sending the Metal Jack loader to Chinese-speaking targets using COVID-themed attachments. They noted in the report they hadn't figured out the full exploit chain yet, but they know that Metal Jack is a malicious DLL. They suspect that one of the functions in there gets called once the victim opens the attachment or runs it or something. And they know that it uses shell code to basically steal information off the victim's computer, like the computer name and username, and then exfiltrates that using a similar technique to that phishing email, basically append it to a URL and then call the URL, which exfiltrates the data out. I guess it kind of makes sense that we're seeing nation states go after each other with regards to this crisis now. They even included, like, the last paragraph of their report on this was, the COVID-19 crisis poses an intense existential concern to governments, and the current era of distrust is amplifying uncertainties, encouraging intelligence collection on a scale that rivals armed conflict.
I know. It's
which I thought was accurate.
Yeah, it's very interesting.
Basically what we're seeing.
I think our audience has heard us talk about nation states, and we've both probably shared our like personal theories on whether or not these are good. Like, I think we both said we realize espionage exists and people have to do it, but we don't like kind of black ops that attack private infrastructure. But in this case, it's almost like Vietnam just wants to learn what China's not telling us so that they can keep themselves more safe from a pandemic. And I you know, it's hard to really judge what is good or bad espionage, but this is kind of a different type of espionage than just stealing, you know, government, you know, sensitive war information, or literally stealing money like apparently some governments might do, a certain nation state.
I'd say if you had to have the spectrum of this to like North Korea allegedly releasing WannaCry, this is probably on the wider end of the gray
exactly
scale.
So yeah, it is kind of interesting, and it shows. I mean 10 years ago, people would scoff at security people like us who talked about how cyber would become real, would really have a real effect on war and global politics and espionage. And now it seems to be the number one thing used by every single state out there.
It's almost like we need some sort of like UN cyber treaty.
Why couldn't that prediction have come true in 2019?
I mean, it's actually kind of ironic that like Russia was actively working towards it, even though their version of it didn't really seem that great, which is why no
Russia,
one really
Russia
came on board.
And China. That's the problem when you get nation state espionage in. They're like, sure, bud, just like our Congress, let's tack in a little extra stuff that allows us to be big brother to our own country at the same time. Yeah, and politics, you gotta love them. Sarcasm.
Oh, yeah.
Anyways, interesting.
And it was also
story.
Kind of. Yeah, it's also kind of interesting that they're using COVID-19 as the lure in these phishing emails too, as they try and steal information
about
on
COVID-19.
It's such a hot topic, it makes sense to use that as well, especially if you're phishing people that are working directly with it too.
Absolutely. I think we talked with Kat Murdoch in a few episodes ago about how people are already concerned and uncertain. It's easy to tip them over
exactly.
With a little more social
engineering. Also, in somewhat related news, the World Health Organization just released a press release the other day saying that ever since cyber criminals leaked about 450 email addresses and passwords of World Health Organization employees online, they've seen a dramatic increase in cyber attacks targeting them and the public. They specifically said a fivefold increase in cyber attacks targeting the World Health Organization. They also said they're seeing a lot of scammers trying to impersonate the WHO in emails targeting the public sector, trying to trick them into donating to a fictitious fund instead of the correct, I think it's the COVID-19 Solidarity Response Fund, which is run by the WHO. And that's pretty much par for the course. Like, I remember, like, with the hurricanes in the past and tsunamis and stuff, there's always cyber criminals setting up fake funds to try and steal donations from good people.
It really kind of disgusts me. As we're talking about the grayness or between the white and black of hacking, you know, sometimes you hear, you know, excuses for why people in other countries hack. Like if you're in a country that has no good economic potential, you're a highly skilled person that knows cyber stuff, but there's really no way for you to have a living. There's this philosophical idea that he's not stealing because he wants to, he's stealing because he wants to stay alive. And while I don't necessarily believe in that, you can't do that argument while you're going after an organization that's trying to save people's lives. You know what I mean? It's just, while I might have sympathy sometimes for that argument, when your target is literally organizations that are trying to help people, I just don't, there's no excuse for that. It disgusts me.
I agree entirely. And to our listeners, just keep an eye out for fake emails claiming to be coming from the World Health Organization.
Yeah.
And if you are looking to donate to a charitable fund, go directly to their website and locate it from there instead of out of an email.
And by the way, don't let it stop you from those donations. As Mark said, just do the extra work to make sure you go to the real source. But keep donating, guys. But just make sure you're not being scammed to give it to someone that absolutely doesn't deserve it. By the way, I think the good news on this attack for WHO anyways is I don't know if we know exactly how the addresses were leaked, but most of the addresses and passwords seem to be like really old legacy things that, you know, maybe were having to do with the old extranet system that doesn't really get used much anymore, and maybe even retired staff and partner who aren't really active. So it doesn't stop the phishing, but at least they can't do more damage.
Exactly. I guess that is the silver lining in the crappy situation there. So with that, I don't know. Everyone wash your hands. Stay safe and stay indoors.
Wear a mask or make a mask and give it to
unplug
a friend.
Unplug your computer. We got to find like a happy news story to end these with. Sometime.
Hey, our computers are all making our lives better right now. You know, without our computers, you and I wouldn't be able to connect. Although I guess that could be bad news for you. Maybe you don't want to. But I mean, seriously, if it wasn't for computers and the internet, the whole reason we want you to be secure online is so you can use these to do the Zoom meetings with your mom and dad or your brother or sister. So right now, computer technology is keeping the world connected. It's a great thing. And the only reason we keep you up to date with security is so we can keep using this technology to innovate and make society better. You know, this technology is great, awesome stuff. It's right now, my gaming computer is folding for COVID. So I think don't unplug your computer. Just use it safely online.
Well said. Go computers. Hey everyone, thanks again for listening. As always, if you enjoyed today's episode, don't forget to rate, review, and subscribe. If you have any questions on today's topics or suggestions for future episode topics, you can reach out to us on Twitter. I'm at @XORRO_, Corey is at @SecAdept, and the both of us are at #the443podcast. Thanks again for listening, and you will hear from us next week.